So the natural thing to talk about tonight then is asupa kamatana, or body contemplation. It's quite good to be able to tap into a change of perception around the body. We can do that almost all the time. Sometimes it needs a bit of preparation, it needs some effort to get the trick, so to say. Sometimes it needs a lot of effort, but if one has the right angle on it, it's like with many kamatanas, it's then possible to just recollect the feeling or the access into that world of a different mind state that kamatanas open up to one. So stepping out from the average perception of the skin and the hair, the things that we see, and the things that the upachaya preceptor in the ordination ceremony has advised us to contemplate, the five mula kamatanas: kesa, hair of the head; loma, hair of the body; naka, nails; danta, teeth; tachu, skin. These are the things that we see, and then to get an angle on those things that we see that is not the average one, where we identify with the body or where we use the body in a deluded way, but to get an angle on where we see that there's much more to it, that humblingly we don't actually know. And it's a very creative way you can apply your mind. It's just working with the perception of the things that are as close as it can get to you, your own skin, and try to penetrate it with an understanding of that the skin isn't the way that one usually takes it to be, or anything else that you see at the body, like the hair. Just to find a way of accessing a change of seeing it and a change of feeling around it, and get a different mind state around it. And whether it becomes an asupa nimitta and brings revulsion, aversion, or like disenchantment with it, or whether it becomes just a sense of neutralizing the sense of self, is still open. It can go either way when you work with the 32 parts of the body or the five mula kamatanas. You can either go into that sense of being detached from the identification with the average way of perceiving ourselves, or it can go to the area where one looks at it in a way that's very, very cooling and very, very kind of taking one away from the heat of like the usual kind of love and affection for the things that one feels and one sees and one hears and so forth. The way we usually use asupa kamatana is like we have the chant of the 32 parts of the body as a basis, and even for any other meditation, Ajahn Chah advised to go through the 32 parts of the body at the beginning and the end at least one, three times, just simply going through the whole chain of it, with applying your mind to that, each and every one of these objects of contemplation. And it's one way of doing it is then just to keep going in a certain rhythm or in a certain kind of method that is suitable for oneself. Just find a way of zapping into each of the body parts that one is kind of reciting in one's mind, and then looking at them or finding a way of seeing them that is interesting or whatever, like where you're really kind of sending your mind into these things. It can be in various grades of depth. It can be something like just simply imagining some picture around it, or it can be really feeling it out, like in a sense of like there's a kind of deep sense of where it's located and how it actually feels, and something like attributes of these body parts, like the heaviness or so. You can sense that in your body, or you can sense that there is no thing that's clear around it, and you find an angle on it. For example, if you think about the skin, it's fairly okay and easy to find out where the skin is at certain points of your body, but to see the skin in its entireness, well, the way it kind of covers every aspect, every part of your body, something that you really have to explore and try to find an access point, and then understand that there's actually quite a universe unfolding with the way one approaches this topic or this object of meditation. And it can be kind of going through a certain pattern of like what one is easily able to kind of like take hold of as a perception, say for example the skin as the boundary between the body that we know is sitting here and the air around it, the atmosphere around it. Or it can be something more abstract that you develop from that, something that becomes more like a feeling of like it's like a rubber suit or a wetsuit or something like that. It's my perception, it may not be applicable for everybody, but like just to play around with that and do that quickly and to the point, because like you, in the beginning one goes through all these 32 parts of the body in a sequence, then there's certain ones that are very difficult to find out what they actually are. I say for example the spleen, some inner organ. I don't think there's much of a clear awareness where the spleen actually is, and what its boundaries are, and what's its color, what its nature are, even the heaviness of such an organ. So how you're going to locate the spleen in contrary to the liver or to the bowels or to the whatever else is there, kidneys. So that's a task in itself. Then if you cannot find an angle of finding the spleenness of the spleen in your body, and just live with that, go into what you think is the spleen, and then pass. And sure enough, at some point you get a certain feeling for each and every one of these parts that is uniquely apparent when you devote your attention to it. Whether it's real or not doesn't matter. It's just a matter of focusing yourself into something that you know exists right there in this body that you're sitting with or walking with, and just use your mind and just go in there. So for example, things that we see are easier, say, because we can see them. Everybody knows teeth and skin or nails. But then even the nails, for example, is such an apparent thing. Can you imagine all your 20 nails, kind of how they are located in the universe, the coordinates that they have in space, for example? It's quite a fascinating thing to devote your mind to actually seeing or understanding what is happening with any of those parts of the body. And if one does it like gradually, going through the 32 parts or the 5 parts or any part of the list of the 32, repetitive, when it's like an approximation, one goes closer and closer to something that one doesn't know yet, and one gradually explores it through that, one looks at it from a certain angle, that one somehow has heard something or seen something or remembered something about it, or maybe knows a picture or a book or so, and then goes into that, and then gradually one expands the understanding of what this is, the topic of each and every one of those 32 parts of the body. It's quite a task. It can take a whole night, it can take a whole day, and to really kind of, without any, you know, kind of sense of tiredness or weariness, just to keep inquiring into that. It's very, very fascinating. You literally dive into a universe of the body, which usually one wouldn't know. And whether it's real or not doesn't matter. It's just something that is apparent when you apply your mind there. And it makes you feel very, very kind of alive, very, very uplifted, very fresh. Yet many times, like, one doesn't go into that, and one doesn't really dive into the whole matter. One is still at the surface. One possibly tries to get an angle and can't yet crack it, like go into it. So then never mind, just go, kind of go through it. Go through the motions for a while, but at least have one kind of like attribute or one thing that you can deliberately send your mind to with each and every one of those. And then, sure enough, this one aspect or so of each and every one can get deeper for each and every one. Or another thing happens is that you suddenly kind of get very, very fascinated with one particular aspect of one part of the 32 parts of the body, and the mind just wants to stay there. It just wants to go in there more and more. It's like you dive into a tunnel of a universe expanding from there, kind of unfolding from there. And then to let that happen, don't worry about the rest then, just kind of stay with that. Like, it's just very, very interesting how the mind can lock into something where it's focused on, and then just stay with it and just kind of be happy with it, and just kind of whatever it is, can be anything. It can be actually something that's really abstruse or bizarre if you were to talk about it, or if I talk about it now, you know, these are things that are happening in one's own perceptions or in one's own mind. They're not real, or they're not kind of like applicable to everyone. But what I understand is the thing is that you flip your understanding of what you are, what it is that you have inside you or around you or with you, in a very direct way. So to use a lot of time on that and go into that is that sometimes you're a bit on the surface, sometimes you go deeper, sometimes you kind of just go through the motions, and sometimes you use some external memory, say you've seen some asupa pictures or you've seen some anatomy books or so, and it's of course highly conditioned that what you put in there, but there's a point where with these conditions and these things that are, that you put, that you tell yourself, you teach yourself, like, so now I'm looking at the spleen, for example, or now I'm looking at my wisdom tooth, for example, whatever it is, you know, like, find your own way. But then at one point, like, the things really suddenly become real, and they just turn inside out. It's just something, like, something unfolds, which you won't be able to tell what it is exactly, but like, when you're looking at it, it just looks absolutely real, and then that's really fun, and it's usually a great feeling of relief and a great feeling of expansion of the mind that happens along with that. The mind is very receptive then, and you're actually kind of in a different mode of applying your mind. And in this mode of applying your mind, it's almost like you're playing a video game or whatever, a three-dimensional virtual reality, but without any computers or anything fake or artificial, it's absolutely happening right there. And sometimes, like, you, for whatever reason, again, one doesn't know, you you feel these teachings are coming up around the body, because you know this is what we're doing. We're telling ourselves that you know, the body is not self, the body is not beautiful, is not attractive, shouldn't give rise to cravings and lust and things like that. And these things, they come back at that time when you're ready, when you're focused and still and you have an angle on the body in a certain way, they come up and they become really vivid at that time. And then just to live those teachings out and experience them at that moment when the mind is going into the universe of the body. And the dispositions of people are different. Some of us may find it easy to develop this, and for some of us it is a hard task. But we can approach it from many angles, so I think it's a very useful one. It's not a one size only, and what I've just described is my personal way of approaching it. It may well be different for other people. And I would say anything goes, as long as you stay in the 32 parts of the body or the 5 parts, the Mulakamatana, and your mind is truly with it. And all the teachings about whether this is asupa or supa or atta or anatta, just forget about them, and they'll come up when you're there, when the mind is peaceful enough and is dedicated to seeing what is happening in your body. The right teachings come up, because we all have prepared the teachings quite well in our sanya. It's almost like it teaches yourself. So one doesn't have to kind of worry, or like a bit, you know, one can every now and again give it a bit of an impulse and say, tell oneself, look, is this actually attractive? What's the repulsiveness around it? Say you're looking at your stomach, for example. It may well be just simply fascinating, but not really ugly or repulsive. You just let it be the way it is, and then maybe it doesn't become ugly, repulsive, but it becomes something that you know is real for you and is not what you usually associate with your body and identify with it. And you've got the strength of mind to be able to focus into that and live your life with a flip of reality that is very, very meaningful in many ways. And to make much of that and go into that area a lot, you can then use on many occasions. If you get skilled with it, you can actually do it quite quickly. Go into something, go out of it and change. And if it doesn't work, then just use the mechanics of it. It's still better than getting carried away with anything else that is kind of bound up with the five senses, 6 senses or so. You just go use the mind in order to flip the reality. And pictures that we have seen or experiences that we have had on whatever level, they come back if the mind is dedicated to its task. Say if one sees a funeral, a cremation, and there's something that catches the eye because it's a very unusual sight, possibly a shocking sight, it may come back, but it comes back in a very, very uplifting way. It comes back in an insightful way rather than in a shocking way or a perverted, abstruse way. It comes, feels light, and there's this sense of joy with it because you're seeing something that is hard to see, and you're freeing yourself from the normal tendencies being a bit like conditioned. But you just use another condition, you use another thing that you've already seen somewhere else, and you apply it, and it just feels like you're mature, and you're looking at it, and wow, this is real, and I can do this, and it's quite uplifting. So it can be anything that for the average perception of people looks weird, shocking, or strange, like say, you know, a skeleton, or like a blood-smeared skeleton, or like a skeleton with sinews and blood, or without blood and sinews, or only the skeleton dry, or only certain bones, or it can be the skeleton with a bit of meat or a full meat or whatever. I don't know, vegetarian, maybe it's not so easy to imagine these things, but like there's lots of things you can play around with, like perceptions from the kitchen, perception from the food table. I noticed that whenever there's like a feeling of liquid, when there's a feeling of like something ketchup-y, the mind actually feels like it's a bit revolves, and then you inquire, hey, where did that come from? Actually, it's just water element, it's just a certain color. It's just like, what's that like anyway? And then you can really play around with it. Some of it is perception, but some of it becomes a reality through using a long focused attention span on the same topic. It suddenly becomes vivid, say, you know, like it's not trivial, like we're using a subic stuff all day, say for example, like greasy things like the jivon at the collar, for example, or like, you know, we have to bathe and rub off our kind of grease, for example, or like you know, when we eat, like the classic kamatanas, we contemplate the food before we eat. And if you got a pizza, just imagine this pizza, what it actually is, a piece of whatever, sausage, salami, it's a minced, or like it's a piece of body made into pieces and pressed into this weird thing, you know, that's right in front of you. Just imagine that, the link, you know, what is this? Usually one doesn't contemplate that because one just is carried away. Oh, yeah, salami, it tastes great, yeah. Hope it's quite salty and sharp and spicy or so. But like, you know, you don't actually contemplate it. But if you if you have the space just to look into it, like you can turn your pizza into a super kamatana, for example, or spaghetti sauce, you know, this kind of stuff with minced meat. For example, it's really actually quite perverted what we're putting into us. Then you can imagine if you got an angle on these things, and you imagine how the food goes down your your throat, goes into the stomach, what it looks like. And then if you have done a lot with that, you know how your stomach feels inside, you know how it takes on stuff like that, what's in there. You actually know, it doesn't, maybe it's not quite the same picture that a camera would give if it went down your throat, but you've got an intuitive feeling, this is like how it looks inside and how the food is swimming around there or whatever. And sometimes this is linked to things that we actually do see with our normal daily life perception. Say for example, if we go tomorrow to the autopsy, some part of the autopsy is that they have to scoop out the contents of the stomach, which is the stuff that we eat, or the person that has died has been eating the day before. Or you got like the urine from the bladder, they have to take a syringe and pull it out. Or sometimes you got the chest filled with a sea of blood or so. Or you got fat, you know, the stuff that on your food table you don't want to eat. It's the kind of meat that doesn't taste. It's got the fat and the skin with it. And you know, when they cut through the body, you see there's this layer of this yellowish fat, and more or less for each body. So it's really good to keep these pictures in mind, and then have more of an access, more of a pool of access points which you can use for changing the perception of what is happening with your own body. And then of course these things, if one has kind of stored them and pictured them and taken them in, say at an autopsy or from a movie or from an experience like at a cremation, or like something from your past, maybe when you've been kind of nursing other people or so, or like, you know, you've been having a wound yourself or something like that, and to keep these in your repertoire of applications that you use when you go through the 32 parts of the body. It doesn't mean that there's anything weird about it. It's just a part of reality, of life, that people usually exclude. Just don't look at it, and they're afraid of it. There's an emotional response to it, and a subconsciously, you know, a subconscious feeling of taboo. It's ingrained by nature into people. Let's say, for example, if you think about a cut, so say somebody has driven the machete at the dying shed into his into his into the Achilles heel of his foot. If you imagine this, it immediately brings up a feeling of almost vomit or so. Even though what is happening there is just like a bunch of, you know, organic tissues and stuff that, say sinews or things like that. You got a chicken leg in your bowl, you like it, you know, in the morning. Just kind of play around with these and compare the realities that are possible for a human mind to experience. And it's interesting, rewarding and soothing, and you've got lots of kamatana. You can spend the whole night without getting tired. If the thing takes off, if it sometimes, you know, it doesn't get the angle around it, and maybe, you know, one needs to kind of convince oneself a bit, you know, this is really worth doing it, and or find it an access point where you can zap into the whole universe underneath, the superficial perception of things. But once this works, like, it's actually really kind of a very uplifting, fascinating experience of the Buddha's teachings. And then whatever it is that you do with your mind, and whatever angle you see, whatever perception you revive in the practice, then later when you open up your eyes and you see the world as it arises with your open eyes and on your daily life consciousness, it is different. It is not the same. It is just very, very different. How long it stays as different is like depends on your kilesas, how strong they are. Usually the normal kilesa is wanting this and that and feeling delighting in this and that. They take hold quite short. You know, it's not like through a night of a super kamatana you can immediately swap your whole way of looking at the world. But like there's a sense of that as soon as after having kind of been in your sub-universe of a super kamatana or body contemplation from the inside, and then you open up the eyes, you experience the outside in a different way, at least for a certain very, very short time. And this is something that also happens many times when we go to these autopsies. Afterwards, you walk around and there is something, you may not be able to name it then, because like there's a lot of different influences coming. There's also smells, and there's also a kind of like an angle of like, this is kind of, you know, kind of a taboo and a certain excitement around it. And then you walk out to the parking lot on the street and you find what is that sort of fake here? They're all like, yeah, they haven't seen this yet. And it just feels very sobering, very kind of like, like making us feel a bit more detached. And all the Kubajans talk about this a lot, like west or east. If monks have the chance to experience this this angle around what the body can be or what the body really is, then it is a very, very profound thing, and you hear a lot of talks about that. So if we have the chance to experience a bit of it, and then we should make much of it and really also beforehand, you can also kind of do the practice before, whether you've actually seen it or not, doesn't really matter. I had this thing like really wanting to see an autopsy for quite a few months, like when I was a samanera and when I was and in my first pansa, and I was in Chonburi, and I more or less I just really wanted to see this thing. It's kind of I've never been able to see this in the West, more or less. And Ajahn Jandi, he was kind enough like to arrange it all. Like I was really pushing it, quite obnoxiously pushing him to call up people and make it possible that we go to the police hospital. And just as an average pushy guy, I got what I wanted. So, and then we were there, but my karma wasn't good enough. Like they let us in only too late. And then it was in the police hospital where that later went quite a lot of times, police hospital, and they had already sewn up all the bodies. They let us in when it was all finished. I think they felt they had something to hide or whatnot. I don't know, there's weird stuff going on every now and again. So I felt a bit disappointed, but like at least, you know, I saw all these dead bodies. It was quite a lot, and you've got the drawers outside. You can open up and see various ones, like some bloated ones, some black ones, some wobbly, and kind of like kind of jelly-ish ones, and it's just quite a lot. And but I still hadn't seen, you know, this kind of stuff that I was hoping, like, you know, we got the chance, the 32 parts of the body, you want to see what the spleen is like, for example. I've never had a medical education, so I don't know what this is, you know. So I just thought, like, so later I asked Ajahn Janmi, so what do I do? You know, I still don't know what the spleen is like. He said, just take whatever you think about the spleen, and for heaven's sake, just look at it. It can be anything. It may not be the real anatomic, whatever three-dimensional picture of the spleen, but like, or like the stomach or whatever, or the liver, but like, it is real for you, and this is the thing that counts. It is something that you experience about what is happening in your body, and therefore it becomes real. And this is the thing to work with, a point of where it becomes reality and where it becomes alive, and it becomes like direct experience. Even if I was to have a perfect knowledge about the spleen from a medical textbook and knew all the whatever little arteries and whatever that go in there and out there, and all the kind of whatever nerves that are attached here and there, I don't know whether the spleen actually has any, but like, you know, these things that the medical students have to memorize, I may not still be on the level of ever experiencing what the spleen is, but, you know, just going through the notions. My sister studied medicine. I remember her memorizing all these nerves going through here and there and whatnot, and I don't think she ever went into the reality of it. Of course they don't, they just kind of know the topography and the map of it, whereas we kind of like fill it with a sense of life, this is real. And so one can take anything for that. It can be something as silly as a nail or as silly as a piece of hair. Like, it's just kind of, if you talk about it, if you explain people that aren't practicing about it, they think you're a bit weird and a bit nuts. Like, so if you say you take a hair and you look at the hair, like how it is actually made, it's just fairly, you know, what the heck are these Buddhists talking about? But like, it can be anything, as like a tiny thing that before one has always taken for granted that it is there, and one looks at it in a new way, and it just becomes very, very different, and there's a feeling of estrangement with what you actually are. So it's a universe of practice that's opening up, and there's lots of creativity to be done around that, and there's no fixed method. Even if I tell you some of my gimmicks, my tricks or so, you know, I've mentioned a few, say, for example, may not at all be the ones that are workable for you, so just feel free. Like, I remember, like, when I came here as a layman for the first 2 months, and there was one of the monks that later disrobed, quite a very, very diligent and young monk, and he had just come back from a branch monastery, and he was absolutely dedicated to contemplating his teeth. I thought, hey, what's that? What are they doing here? Now I'm sure, isn't there anything better to teach? And, you know, what's that, you know? And now, you know, later I do understand the teeth are excellent for contemplation. You've got lots of nerves in there, you've got a sensitivity where each tooth is, because there's so much experience, you can, yeah, kind of, even though they're quite static, you use them all the time, it's very good, and they're directly linked to the skull. So the access point for the skull, if you want to contemplate the skull, you can go through the teeth, for example, or just stay with the teeth. Get the right kasina, for example, if you look at the teeth, if your teeth are white, if your teeth are yellow, you get the yellow kasina, you get a super acidic thing about the filthy stuff on there. It's excellent. I mean, nobody would think Buddhism is about contemplating this thing, but like, it's the heart of the forest tradition to take these things and explore them, and then humbly enough start at one point, and it just shakes the whole perception of what you are. And it needs to be done a lot. It is not something you just can turn on and off if you haven't done it for a long time. But if you have it, if you have time, and you go through the night, or you got a whole day or something like that, and you walk, walk, walk. Many times you can do this in walking meditation, Now, or like in sitting meditation, sometimes you even forget that you're sitting just because there's so much stuff inside that's happening. You don't even realize what you're doing externally because the whole thing is, the action is taking place inside. So it's just quite a thing if you have done it for a while, then later you can actually come back into these areas very easily and go back and keep them alive, like a piece of chant that you've memorized, like you just kind of tip at it and then it runs by itself, like more or less. Like, and this is like what many times we can use then, say if the mind gets carried away with a supanimitta, say we see something that is attractive or that brings up sexual feelings, just go into some part of the body where we've had this shift of reality, or where we were able to kind of stay with a different dimension of it, and it takes away the attention, or brings the attention to something that is stable, safe, Dhamma, from something that is really flashing up and overpowering you. So this is kind of reflections on Asupa Kamatana, and I hope we can make much of it before and while and afterwards. Tomorrow morning, even if we don't get to go, you know, like it's like you can still contemplate your spleen, even if you haven't ever seen a cut up open body. Like I wanted to go to see them, and it didn't actually work. But like you still got the motivation, and you still got the you know, like your universe inside yourself already. So you actually don't need to go tomorrow, but like if we get to go, so why not? You know, something that's not wrong. So, mindfulness for contemplation.